This is a production of Cornell University.
Great. The time is now 4:46 p.m. We are calling the February 27th SA meeting to order. Will the clerk please call the roll? Ali Khan? Where's Melissa? Unexcused.
Here. She's excused.
He's here.
Yeah. He's coming with us. He's doing it.
Here.
Excuse. Unexcused. What?
Talbot.
Here.
Excuse.
Oh, yeah, that's what excuse. Sorry. Where's Worship? Oh, Worship here. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. Not counting me, correct? All right, close enough. 22? All right, great. Next item on the agenda is approval of the February 20th minutes. Do I hear any motion? There's been a motion to approve. It's been seconded. Is there any dissent? Seeing none, the minutes are approved. Next portion on the agenda is open microphone, EVP ballot.
Good afternoon, everyone. If there's anyone in the audience today who is not currently on our agenda but would like to come forward and speak to the Assembly, feel free to do so right now. Seeing none, open microphone is now closed.
Fantastic. First announcement, on to announcements and reports. The first announcement goes to DOE Muglia's Elections Committee update.
Great. Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. Yes, we are back in election season. Petitions for a few seats are still open until tomorrow. We are definitely at large. The minority liaison at large, the LGBTQ at large representative, and the human ecology representative. Those seats we will be accepting promotional and election materials until 10 o'clock tomorrow. And then for all of the seats, campaigning will begin 1 o'clock tomorrow. So all candidates are encouraged to come to Monday Day Hall tomorrow to pick up their promotional materials, which I will be ready to do by campaigning at 1. And then secondly, I'd like to invite everyone to our 2 main cases for next week. So on Tuesday, all the at-large candidates, including the representatives of minority LGBTQ women's issues and international, will be debating in Zurich Hall, 601 at 6 o'clock, sponsored by Romana, ISD, and Haven. And then on Wednesday, we'll be in a presidential debate in 305 Ives Hall at 7:30. If you have any more questions, feel free to reach out. And anyone who's here from the community that's running and wants to talk, I'll be coming around in 5 minutes.
Great, thank you. Didn't quite make it to the agenda, but Financial Aid Review Committee actually met on Friday. Can you give your update quickly, please?
Yeah, we worked on last Friday. We worked on the FHS grant application and possibly putting that on the arm to make it more accessible for students. We also talked about alternative uses of the student self-employment fund because the endowment is currently growing in size and withdrawal of that grant. And so we have to come up with a new approach to something like that. And our next meeting will be Friday, March 7th, from 3:30 to 4:30 in the finance area. And anyone who is interested is welcome.
Great. Next, we're going to go into organizational spotlight, VP of Public Relations, Harris.
Announce.
Oh, I'm sorry. VP or EVP Ballard is actually going to do it. Sorry.
This week's organizational spotlight goes to the Cornell Model United Nations Conference. You guys can stand up and come forward to our little table. We're excited to have you here. The Cornell Model United Nations Conference is truly a unique operation on Cornell's campus. As a completely student-run affair, it brings in nearly 700 high school students from around the nation and world to discuss international issues. With its multifaceted focus on professional, intellectual, and social skills, it offers its staff of 100-plus Cornellians many opportunities of growth. Through the nature of the debate that it facilitates and the real-world skills acquired through event planning, without a doubt, it creates a dialogue and more impactful and united student body. This can be seen in the mission statement of their umbrella organization, the Cornell International Affairs Society. The mission of the Cornell International Affairs Society is to cultivate within students an enhanced understanding of international affairs while developing essential skills in public speaking, leadership, rhetoric, and diplomacy.
Fantastic. So first, big congratulations to all of you. Round of applause. And now I'd invite you to take a few minutes and say a few words about your organization. Thank you so much, and we look forward to working with you and supporting your organization as best we can in the future. And I'm sure EVP Balik will be, I'm sorry?
I said we should get an Instagram picture.
Oh, yeah. Maybe. Lindsay can take care of the Instagram picture. But we'll be, I'm sure EVP Balik and a few of us will probably be following up with you all right after this meeting, if not in the very near future, to see what else we can do. So Lindsay's going to do an Instagram picture of you all right now. So look like you're looking at us engaging. Perfect. All right. Thank you guys so much again, and congratulations again. One more round of applause for Stephen. Fantastic. This meeting is at 6:30, but you're not required to stay. I mean, it's riveting. Don't you worry. We're going to talk about divestment, so it's going to be good. You should stay. But
if any of you would like to contact me, you can contact me at sg@cmo.net.
Thanks so much, Garrett. All right. Next on the agenda, I don't see VP Block.
Oh, great.
Oh, you're over here. I'm sorry. You're the first time on me. Next is an appropriation from the update, VP Block.
Good afternoon, everyone. So the Appropriations Committee has been meeting. It's been great. So as far as, you know, we had a discussion on Appendix B, and we're pretty much done with most of the organization's individual Appendix B. We've been having actually some great conversations about things like tracking attendance, about penalties for violating Appendix B, things like that. So that's moving along strongly. As well as the endowment, we also had a pretty interesting conversation about that. And I think that rather than looking at the endowment and simply either going into like a CapEx or innovation fund, it seems like the committee is moving more towards some hybrid where you could potentially use these funds to fund CapEx projects over the years as well. So that's just kind of something to, you know, if people have any questions, I'll talk offline. I don't really want to use that much time on it. But it does seem like we may be trying to combine elements of a number of things that people want, maybe putting some of the money towards a CapEx project, some of the money towards an innovation project, something like that. So,
thanks. Thank you so much. All right, next is a FADEC update. I don't see VP Tulpke here, so we're going to skip that. A Community Life Committee update, Representative Tsenko.
So in terms of initiatives, there wasn't a whole lot of progress last week. We will be implementing office hours, of course, on Sunday to kind of better work on these initiatives. So I'm going to be available, I haven't figured out the room quite yet, but from around noon to 4 on Sunday, and we'll have a half hour, 15 minute time slots for each initiative that Community Life is working on, and then members of that committee or people externally working on it will be able to come in and continue to work on these initiatives. So we're actually
fantastic. Great. Next is the Dining Committee update, Representative Kidunsky.
So, the Community Society has been at the staff in our Dining Committee and the Community Society has been at the and then in regards to the kind of work on, they're looking at the senior plan, how to actually go to the
great. Thank you so much. All right, next is a University Assembly update, VP Lukashevich.
So the University Assembly met this past week. They'll be meeting again on March 11th. At the March 11th meeting, they'll be going over a resolution that addresses the whole Plaza incident from last year. Changes to the code of conduct. So please look online at that resolution, and there's actually, you can actually comment online on any comments you have, or feel free to reach out to any of the University Assembly Executive Board with comments and feedback. They really want to see some feedback from students as well.
Great. Thanks. Since VP Tulpke is here, FADEC update for all you.
We'll be meeting in the next 3 weeks, but for now, that's fine.
Okay. All right, and then a society update, Representative Lee.
Okay, so to update you on the diversity and inclusion plan evaluation process, we can hopefully have created the survey that we'll be using to talk to these individual groups and all the bilateral organizations who did take part in the process this year. Also, I would just like to point out that at meetings we had an embarrassing attendance. So a committee member and Francis and I are looking to revamp the structure to be sure that there are more people in the United States. If we have any suggestions based on the committee and in terms of policies for your community, please come talk to me because I'd love to know what you guys are doing. So thank you.
Thanks. All right. Now we are going to a little complicated. We're actually going a little out of order right now. We're going to do resolution 60 first. That is, they're scheduled to be here from 5 to 5:30, I think is the time. It's divestment and support of Cornell investment and investment strategies for a sustainable future. So if the sponsors of that resolution could please step forward to the table to be ready to present. Now, I'll remind you all that you all have the presentation that was distributed prior to the meeting, so that the screen is actually going to be more so for the audience. You actually have the slides in your agenda packet. It's complete the Faculty Senate resolution, which is what we are essentially endorsing or voting to endorse, and then the actual slides that will be up. I will remind you all that this is still currently listed as new business, meaning that questions and comments cannot be argumentative in nature until you decide to move it to business of the day, and we also cannot vote on it. If and when it does move to business of the day, if we choose to vote on it, it's since it is a sense of the body, the community is entitled to 2 collective votes that shall be allocated accordingly, according to the majority. Make sense? Point of information or speaker's list? Got it. All right, great. So without further ado, take it away, introduce yourselves, and go for it.
I'm Sarah. So about a year ago, we were in the same position talking about divestment. However, this was a little bit of a
budget grant resolution. Today, we're here presenting a resolution that we actually, first passed by the Faculty Senate and then passed by the Graduate and Professional Student Assembly. We're here today to say that we are in solidarity with these other two shared government organizations, and I think that we really are trying to make an effort as all of these companies to support each other in our initiatives. The goal is essentially the same, a little bit different than what we said last year, but I think what's important here is that we're still supporting each other and we still have the momentum to get us towards a more responsible endowment. So, as you can see, if you look at the body of the resolution, last year we passed, the Student Assembly passed a resolution, for those of you who weren't here, that suggested that the university divest in direct holdings and co-mingled funds in the fossil fuel industry and reinvest 30% of the divested fund in sustainable funds. The Faculty Senate resolution is a little bit different because it calls for a more reduction in the use of fossil fuels that will help Cornell achieve carbon neutrality by 2035 rather than 2050. And also, it calls for full divestment from the top 200 coal, oil, and gas companies by the date of 2035.
Thank you, Sarah. I'll introduce myself again. My name is David Bieber. I'm speaking on behalf of Chair of the Climate Justice Organization. Like Sarah said, what we're asking to do today is basically stand in solidarity with the Graduate Professional Student Assemblies and with the Faculty Senate in passing this resolution. Basically, what that is, we're asking to reaffirm the earlier statement that the Student Assembly made last spring. For those of you who aren't there, I'd like to give just a little bit of background information on what what exactly that is. Now that earlier Student Assembly resolution created two work responsible endowment passed by a vote of 22-2 accompanied by widespread student support for 1,000 petition signatures in the undergraduate population were collected, and over 20 student organizations came out in support of divestment from fossil fuels in the form of delivering letters to President Gorbachev. Additionally, it's worth noting that nationally, that effort campaign has been run on over 300 college university campuses. Basically all Cornell peers, Harvard, Harvard, Yale, Brown, Dartmouth, Berkeley, Stanford, the name of the year. And like Sarah said, the Faculty Senate resolution was passed last December, supported by the GPSA resolution 8 earlier this month, and now that same legislation, in addition to being in front of the FAA, is also being brought in front of the Employee Assembly and the University Assembly, with the intention of having all five assemblies in the university passing the same resolution. Very strong, powerful statement. I'd like to go, bring your attention out of slide 5 on why divestment. Inequalities in society and climate change are the two biggest challenges we face in the world today. Our president, David Thornton, said that just last semester. Divestment is one tactic that we have to counter climate change. The next slide. Divestment is not only financially feasible, Professor David Shallow addressed that briefly, but it's also extremely appropriate, highly appropriate tactic when it comes to carbon climate change, given this concept of unburnable carbon. What that basically amounts to is that our government, national government, has given this 2 degrees, adopted 2 degrees centigrade global temperature rise as a threshold above which we would face irreparable damages due to climate change. Therefore, we need to stay at below that 2 degrees centigrade rate in global temperature. Now, in order to do so, we can only burn between about 500 and 1,000 gigatons of carbon dioxide. Put that into perspective, right now proven fossil reserves amount to 3 to 5 tons. That is to say, these companies can only burn 1/3 to 1/5 of what they have. Now, there's two very important points there. One is that those reserves are what make these companies financially strong, what makes them worth investing in today. And then, given this 2 degree century mark, that everyone knows, we can't necessarily count on that happening in the future. Additionally, these companies are still devoting hundreds of billions of dollars a year to expand their reserves, even though they can't burn 3 to 5 tons of what they have. Now, what does that actually accomplish? Divestment is a highly public statement that we demand global carbon intervention, and will raise the level of the political conversation, which is something this country very much needs. At the moment, only about 39% of Americans believe that most scientists believe that global warming is happening, whereas there's about a consensus, about 97% of scientists believe the global warming is not an emergency concern. It's time for academia to engage further into the public conversation. So I'd like to initially give Cornell the opportunity to reconcile our finances with our mission as an institution. It gives us the opportunity to be on the right side of history. Furthermore, it gives us as young people who will be facing the largest burden if we fail to act on climate change soon, it gives us an opportunity to stand up for ourselves. Now, talk a little bit about what divestment is and what it's supposed to do. I'd like to address the point of what divestment is not. Divestment is not meant to have a direct financial impact. Rather, where the real impact is in the public statements that it makes that we demand for carbon intervention. Divestment is not meant to demonize the industry. We understand the role of fossils in society today, obviously, but we need to move away from them. And the fear of hurting feelings is really not the reason for an action when we take it so far. Now, this divestment dipping boost. It's not a decision act, it's quite the opposite. It's for a conversation that will put Cornell at the forefront of that conversation. Finally, divestment is not depriving the industry of funds that would otherwise go towards research and development in renewable energy. One of the trends recently has been for those companies to have been stretched, have been even shedding their investment. The next slide, why Cornell? Divestment gives Cornell, most importantly perhaps, an opportunity to really set an example and really to be a leader. It gives Cornell the integrity and the opportunity to do so. To borrow a phrase that an old professor of mine used, temperance cannot be taught from a bar school. Cornell cannot continue to teach its students that climate change is real, that it's happening, that it's been coming. Cornell cannot continue to be a pioneer in developing alternatives to fossil fuels while still profiting off of the companies who are extracting fossil fuels and burning. Furthermore, Cornell is doing wonderful things on the campus to achieve carbon neutrality. In fact, President Gordon just this week has said that we are about one third of the way towards achieving carbon neutrality. That's huge. That's really fantastic. The problem is that it's not a terribly visible action. Most people, even on the campus, don't know what's happening. Furthermore, as soon as you get off campus, hardly anyone knows what's happening. What Cornell needs to do in order to really be a leader is a visible action, and that's what that is. Now finally, Sarah already touched on this a little bit, but I'd like to go into a little bit more detail on the difference between the early student assembly resolution and the faculty senate resolution we're now asking to come out and support. That student assembly resolution initially called for divestment from direct holdings and coming with funds in the fossil fuel industry, while the faculty senate resolution specifically names the top 200 oil and natural gas and coal companies. It's largely what now is the top 200 companies hold the vast majority of the fossil fuel reserves, but it's defined the scope of the industry. The student assembly resolution called for reinvestment of 30% of divested funds into fossil fuels and green enterprises, whereas the faculty senate resolution makes no provision for reinvestment. The student assembly resolution called for divestment by 2020, whereas the faculty senate resolution calls for divestment by 2035. On that point, that's a false communication, so we don't confuse this as somehow being a watered-down version of the older student assembly resolution. In fact, the impact is immediate for both of these actions, regardless of the time frame over which we divest. So what 2035 gives us instead of 2020 is a more palatable time frame for the university to handle. Finally, the student assembly resolution made no discussion of campus carbon neutrality, where the faculty senate resolution paired divestment with a set up time frame for achieving campus carbon neutrality from 2050 to the date of 2035. Believing that it would be hypocritical to hold one to a different standard than the other. Now I'd like to pass it over to Professor David Shallow, who is going to address the question of financial feasibility of that.
David Shallow, I'm going to address the role of the biology and genetics. As you know, part of the reason that nothing is really happening about carbon. The whole carbon problem is because of the major disinformation campaign going on. And so this is an issue of information. It's an issue where universities have an obligation to play a role in it. What we found is that we publish the papers, but they aren't being heard. So as David said, if we are going to move the carbon challenge, but who's going to know about it? How can we make them feel good about ourselves? What it does do is it gives the integrity and the right to speak out on the issue. That's what the suggestion also shows that can be done. That's what the suggestion part of it is about. Now, as you may know, the president has accepted the 2035 target, the definite target. But his main objection to the investment position is that they're concerned about the potential financial impact on the amount of investment. And what, another aspect of this resolution was it was designed specifically to make sure that we get symbolic value, but that we wouldn't incur a significant financial risk. And I want to go over the numbers. The administration actually has not given us the numbers. The simple thing we see for them is for the simulation of what would be the effect of that investment, but they have not done that. But from information, we've had a number of meetings with the chief financial officer and some of the specifically enough information to form our own estimate of how much we're going to run through that agency. You can actually judge for yourself. So as David said, this is specifically targeted to 200 companies. There's no constraint on the investment, and it's phased in. We can actually reinvest in some of these companies down the road over this 21-year period if they have act in good faith. That'll be a way for us to publicly reward them. The chief investment officer has said, and I assume that this is part of the reason the president is reluctant to move forward on this, his statement to the fact that he said it was that the investment would cost several hundred million dollars to many multiples of that. The Senate did not believe it because the numbers really just don't make a lot of sense. And I want to show you why that's the case. What we do know is that 9% of this is information from the finance office, that 9% of our endowment is invested in energy. But 2/3 of that is invested in what they call private partnerships. These are small companies, non-publicly traded companies. Only 1/3 is invested in companies like BP, Chevron, Peabody Energy, the companies that are in the 200 companies we're talking about. The time average on this was starting out in the first year with 1.1 of these guys invested, and they'll put it out as a time average. So the time average is a factor of 2, we're only going to be affecting less than 1.5% of the endowment. I say less than because what I know, is that 3% of the endowment will be fully covered by energy companies. But these 200 companies are suffering. We expect a large number. That's what we know for the companies in the 300, like the Russian company, they're going to get older than the American. Now, what will be, this is 1.5% of companies will be sold and reinvested. That doesn't mean 1.5% loss. What would be the effect of removing these companies from our portfolio? One way to look at this is to look historically at what would be the effect of investment. And this chart is really pretty important. The bar chart I'm showing it is the annualized return of a 10-year period. If you took out, in this case, the complete oil, gas, and consumables market sector of the stock market, and then if you look at the 10-year period, any of the revenue return, what would be the change? When you draw the buffer line, you can actually be better at 5% than the lower one. In some years, you actually be better, and in some 10-year periods, you better than 10-year periods. But the bottom line is, you never do a whole lot better for a whole lot of standard deviations about 14% plus or minus the effect on your investment. So if we combine this with the fraction of our investment that's actually affected, it comes out to 7.6% effective, we're only doing 1.5%. What we get is about 0.04% effect on our LCIP as long-term investment pool on our investment pool return. Moreover, the LCIP income is only 13% of the operating budget on this portfolio. So when you start figuring out what you're talking about, what you've got is a minuscule effect on the operating budget of the system, plus or minus $94,000. And if you look at the long term, like the primary average over the whole 21 years, it's about plus or minus 0.1%. So that's a big number, $2 million a year, but that's $2 million at $2.1 million, which is our operating cost. And that could be as easily a plus or minus. So we're not saying there's absolutely no risk involved here. would just say the risk is small and the risk is worth taking, and worth taking. Now, the idea that we're kind of shooting ourselves in the foot by selling off some great stockholding like BP, this isn't right. The bottom line, I think, many of you know, is very hard to be smart, and Cornell just happened. Over the last 10 years, we returned about 8.2%. That's great. But on the faculty member with some retirement plan, if I stuck it into Fidelity, I would have gotten 9.6%. If I stuck it into Vanguard, I would have gotten 7.7%. Basically, we're doing kind of whatever it was. It's very hard to predict if anything's going to be better or worse than the long term. The bottom sum, and as David pointed out, many people are saying that these companies are going to systematically lose value when the government is finally going to start imposing things like carbon taxes, and basically going to devalue these assets. There's a good chance that investment may actually be a smart financial move, although that's not the main reason for putting it forward. There's really no sign of waste. There's inertia in the system, I think you know about this, at least in methane gases from the country and so forth. We need to have meaningful action by government soon. As David said, even though we're talking about a safe investment, we will get the symbolic value, it's going to start letting us, hopefully, the IGs, or the Western University, and we're going to get public awareness on this issue, and we'll get that benefit now.
I'm Jeffrey Rupert. I'm from the GPSA. And I've been here for a year ago with some of you helped pass the search resolution to that end. And it was thrilling. And I was there with Professor Chow's first came to Kyoto Maui just after the administration was gone, asking what the faculty could do to help. And that impressed me. I know how hard it was sent, and I've been moved again and again to perceive what faculty are fighting for in this is us. For it's beyond us to see the worst of climate change, and the level of coordination I've seen on this issue this past year between the young and the less young, between students and faculty, has been inspiring and important, exemplary of all the best senses of academic community. So it's in the name of that community, in the name of learning and teaching and standing together, that we are here today. That's what this resolution is about. I'm here on behalf of UCSA. I want to speak briefly on how this resolution touches us in our particular roles as teachers and as researchers to help explain why this resolution is passed so overwhelmingly in the faculty and graduate assemblies. We know what's happening, and we know it nowhere so thoroughly so methodically as at research universities like Cornell. A goal building of what we know and what we do has been the mounting crisis of our time. As James Hansen and Jeffrey Sachs wrote last December, continuation of hypothesis missions, that is, continuation on our present course, given current knowledge of the consequences would be an act of extraordinary, witty, intergenerational injustice. For many, I know this resolution is firstly about recovering some relation between knowledge and action. We name that relation integrity when it's found, and our integrity as researchers, as teachers, is for us the main object and main state of this resolution. David mentioned the quote before, you can't teach temperance from a bar stool, in the classroom or in society at large, how can we teach or talk about fighting climate change when we are invested in, when we are very literally banking on its intensification? These are ethical questions and they are serious. Because let's not forget, when we talk about our relationship to climate change, we are talking about our relationship to something lethal. Moreover, our actions or inaction on these counts is prominent, influential, inescapably political. Almost all of the years since the assembly's first resolution, 9 colleges and universities have begun to divest. Cities, Seattle, Portland, Madison, Santa Fe, San Francisco, Ithaca have voted to divest pension funds often, as in San Francisco's $18 many times larger than Cornell's endowment. Churches, local and national, are divesting. This is a movement. Cornell has been at its forefront. There are now diversity campaigns on more than 300 campuses, ours is the oldest, and ours is the first school of our stature to pass the faculty resolution. Others will follow. This is an enormous credit for our university, and it is leadership that I ask you to uphold, to share, and to affirm. Because in some large sense, organized groups will respond to climate change that are only voted, and every vote, every resolution like this one reinvigorates that vote. If you want a part of that, if you want leadership on emissions reductions, if you want to end the annual $10 billion US fossil fuel subsidy, if you want a level playing field for alternative energy for much of the research we need here, if you want any of that, it should be clear that by now you need a movement. And for that, resolutions and votes like this show where it doesn't come, and maybe our best shot. That's why this is what Time Magazine calls the fastest growing divestment initiative ever. That's why as we pass our resolution, Berkeley passes theirs, and frankly, I'm going to say that. That's why we're making headlines in recent months in the New York Times, USA Today, Al Jazeera, the Washington Post, etc. That's why the head of the fifth largest financial institution in the world has endorsed divestment. Because it's just, because it's logical, and because it works. For all these reasons, I urge and I invite you to join our assemblies in supporting this resolution. Thank you.
I'm Brian Chavez, another faculty member, and I have just a few quick points to wrap up our presentation. The effort to call attention to the climate problem started here, as was pointed out, and we're asking you to continue your leadership on this important issue. We have worked to broaden the resolution in a way of having a greater impact on the world and on Cornell. And we've tried to involve a broad segment, in fact, everyone at Cornell in this effort. Achieving climate neutrality sooner is a grand challenge. It's not easy, as the president correctly points out. It's going to have to involve all of us. So we're finding an increasingly steep mountain as we approach 2025, and it will be easier if all of us are involved and possible if all of us are not involved. The divestment part of this resolution is the most controversial, but we have carefully analyzed the data that has been made available to us, and we are confident that the financial projections from the investment office simply can't be true. So we endorse your vote for a continuing exploration of whether divestment is the most prudent and the most ethical decision for Cornell to make. Thank you.
So that's pretty much it. If you guys need your agenda packet, not only is there our resolution, but we attached the CFA resolution to the package of Senate resolution, as well as their legacy and the slides for the PowerPoint in case you need to check that.
Fantastic. So I did say that at 5:30 we are actually going to hear the University Registered Organizations Resolution, because the Ombudsman, somebody from the Ombudsman's office is here, and I want to make sure they have all the time. So there are six people currently on the speaker list. Audience members, you are welcome to speak. Please just raise your hand so I know. And every third person will be a community member if they are a listener on the list. So in the next 5 minutes, we are going to just continue on with this speaker's list, and then at 5:30 we're going to go to University Registered Organizations. Once that expires, we can continue with this discussion, but I just want to make sure that everybody gets their time. People have come and left their offices to do this. All right, so first person on the speaker's list, and note everyone has 45 seconds. First person on the speaker's list is Representative Bonatti.
Yeah, first of all, thank you very much for bringing information to the table. I just had a couple of questions. First of all, how do you mean about the response to the passing of the faculty amendment? Secondly, I was here last year when the Chief Science Officer of the Cornell Endowment came, and then, some people say that figures are not right, because they are right, but from the situation, it was pretty clear that that our students have a very severe impact on the financial position of the university, affecting the policies and affecting our students. And this is also supported by the fact that no other abilities have passed any development related university sponsored initiative to my knowledge. So apart from the initiative, do you have any clear results from other abilities, for example, on the progress? And
right, that's time, so I'm not gonna let you get in. Yeah, we're going to be limited to the 45 seconds, sorry.
Okay, I'm going to do a set of dynamics to answer all of those in 45 seconds, that's probably not possible. I think the President of Georgia answered me that right away. In his response to the Faculty Senate, I'm thrilled that he is doubling kind of all in on achieving carbon neutrality by 2035. I'm really thrilled for him. I think he said, I think he might have read it plenty of other things, the title of the long term I don't know whether that document is safe on faith for the endowment, and until I know whether it's safe on faith, I can't endorse it. And that's obviously the argument to say it's a research institution, we do things scientifically, we don't do things unless we have enough of that. As far as the chief financial officer numbers, I've been able to sit down with him with the chair of the finance committee, the board of trustees, the last two semesters to talk to them about negotiating about that estimate, and I've asked them repeatedly whether they have really, how they have come up with those numbers, how they have conducted a feasibility study, if they look historically, like Professor Shallon mentioned, and they've been unable to tell me how they came up with those numbers. So, being a scientist student myself, and being an intelligent engineer, and I can't trust anyone's numbers unless I see justification behind them. The only way that I can see them is unsubstantiated. And I think passing this resolution takes us one step further towards them having to provide us with 10 concrete numbers. If that isn't not financially feasible, it's going to destroy the endowment. I'm not going to urge it anymore. But we've done our homework. We believe very strongly that it will not have a substantial effect on the endowment. And we haven't given any numbers to the country.
Great. Gave you a little
extra time. Sorry, I couldn't
give you a little extra time there. We're going to, since there are a few more people, don't worry, we're going to come back to this discussion. Next is Representative Stefanko.
So, I was in meetings with Chief Investment Officer and OPEC Committee, the Chair, and they seemed to me to indicate that their numbers weren't right, that they hadn't done the study because they weren't comfortable sharing that information students, so they often actually in upcoming meetings at the next work of the weekend, they would share some of that information. So I've been additionally in that conversation, they seem very against doing this, that they've run the numbers. So I guess I'm just wondering where your calculation you believe they've gone by. They are the ones that are accessing the numbers, and they are the ones who see them on a day to day basis, compared to a few small projections in comparison to
Right. So, I'm going to now also show it in a little bit more detail, but I just want to remind you that in our discussion with Dr. Patchman and J.J. Edwards, I was discussing the student assembly resolution, which was, in its logistics very different than the faculty center resolution, even though it aims to accomplish the same thing.
In our discussions with Mr. Edwards, we've made a big point of how much money Cornell makes on its private partnership investment. What would have been affected by the previous resolution and should not be affected by this new resolution. What was upsetting to me, frankly, is that the numbers he gave to the faculty when he responded to the faculty were exactly the same as the numbers he gave when he responded to the student resolution. Not taking into account the fact that private partnership is not affected at all. So, and that there's a much smaller fraction affected. The numbers that are on the slides you have, those come from Mr. Edwards himself. So you can figure it out. $5 billion investment, 1.5% time average. What do you think is going to be, or you can just go on the web and look for yourself at what's been the 10-year return from DC relative to charter simply doesn't permit a 10-year period. So, you know, we could be off by a factor of 2 or 4, we can't be off by a factor of 20, and that's the kind of discrepancy we've got.
Great. Since the time is now 5:30, I'm going to ask that you guys step back for a second and allow the sponsors of Resolution 51, University Organization Guidelines, as well as any of the speakers that they brought for Linda, if you wanted to step up as well, you can feel free to do that this time. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I get that wrong? Oh, not with you. Oh, I'm sorry. She's with your resolution. Oh, I'm sorry, I had the wrong resolution. So it's not 51, it is 55. I'm sorry, R55, restorative justice for the Cornell community. My apologies, I'm sorry. I was wondering why everybody kept looking at me all confused. I should have said something. All right, so we're scheduled to be in discussion on this until 5:45. Whenever you're ready. The clock is still ticking, just so y'all know. You only have until 5:45.
Yeah, sure. So, I think I've had a better sense of what we're
Great. So the first person on the speaker list is Representative Hudson.
Thank you for coming forward today.
Next is Representative Henderson.
Yeah, one question I can ask you, Dr. President Jennifer, was what happened to victims and defendants who are uncooperative with the process and how they feel what her case is going on?
Thanks for the question. I think probably the best way to address that is maybe the reason that I came here to maybe offer a little bit more explanation about what Mr. Justice is, as opposed to Cornell's judicial system. So in general, in say our campus judicial system, if someone is accused of a violation of the code of conduct, they either admit to the violation, there's a summary decision being or that they have to have a hearing and they go before the university hearing board. And then a panel of student secretaries that decides A, whether the student's in violation, and B, what sanctions should be. The sort of justice is a different process. In many universities, it's a version of some of the judicial system. What we're talking about here in Cornell is a process where violations are, violations. Incidents, even in the case of the questions which I was talking about are biased incidents. Incidents that aren't judicially charged have an opportunity to be addressed. So in other words, if there were such an incident and the person or person who were perceived to be responsible agreed to go through the determination process and take a voluntary document, and for the parties who were victimized by the process, wanted to go through the disability justice process, there would be a process convened, and it would involve examining what the harm is, and then figuring out, based on the harm, how to kind of remedy that situation so that the victim to the extent possible are helped to the extent possible, they harm, and other effects on parties. And so that it's a learning opportunity for the person who is perceived to have engaged in to engage in the violence, so that he or she has the opportunity to learn about and reflect on what happened and participate in the process. So in summary, in the standard judicial process, it's sort of just a board deciding on sanctions. In the restorative justice process, it's putting the harm in the center and kind of figuring out, given that there's a harm, how can we try to remedy that situation? Does that answer what you were getting at?
Yes.
It has to be voluntary, so that there's a whole process of analyzing whether it's appropriate for perpetuation.
Because of that, it's also very much a community-oriented approach to testing for our campus, where we all get together, we teach one every day, we learn how to get our class together. That approach in which we try to identify differences and understand where your test is coming from is far more effective than spending unnecessarily. Not that in certain situations it's been necessary, but I think we're always going to have these differences, because the difference is certainly to be some response to this, needs to be some education that happens, and also some restoration, I guess, in particular, happens over time.
Great. We're going to move on to the next person because there are a few more people. Next is VP Batista.
I actually yield my time to the chair.
Next is Rep. Maletti.
So, thank you guys for coming out. I definitely like it. I think it's great. I just wanted to do this to speak a little bit more about specifically with something that's delicate with sexual harassment. How could you guys walk me through specifically what the procedure would be?
I did have a question / comment. So in instances, let's say, or we have incidents like we've had in the past, maybe Dean Hubble might say something too, I'm not sure. If there was something that causes a public disruption, how would we go about using this system in, I guess, remedying the community as one of the affected parties?
So in the
definition,
we talk about
the
different topics that the human environment, the people involved in the system.
There's been a call for questions. It's been seconded. Is there any dissent? Seeing none, we are going to do a roll call vote, please. This is an act of legislation, just so everybody is clear. So the community is not entitled to vote on this. Sorry. All right. So whenever you're ready, Brian. Matt.
Bailey?
Yes.
Batista?
Yes.
Mandari?
Yes.
Locke?
Yes.
Benani.
Step out of the room.
Chen.
Yes.
Jarger.
Yes.
Genesi.
Yes.
Eric.
Yes.
Henderson.
Yes.
Danger.
Yes.
Hudson.
Yes.
Lou.
Yes.
Uzer.
Yes.
Ma. Maletti.
Yeah.
Banjo. Talbot.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Down. All right. Back to 21.
Yes.
By a vote of 21-0-0, the motion passes. Congratulations. I'm sorry? Very quickly, because I go back to this.
If anyone is interested in starting holding, they're going to make a history that we want to get as many people involved as possible
to get
this through. So please
keep calendars after. Fantastic. I'll communicate this tomorrow morning to the president. So, great. Thanks. All right. Thanks for being here, Mr. All All right, returning back now to resolution number 60, the divestment strategies that you guys want to continue, we're going to continue on with the speakers list that was listed. Next on the speakers list is Representative Kittinger. Sure. There's been a motion to move this to business of the day. It's been seconded. Any dissent? Seeing none, this is now business of the day, so open for just general discussion now. Next is DOE Muglia.
Thank you. Especially with this weekend hockey game, let's not get Harvard Harvard in the center. So before one of the last slides you were presented talked about some of the past divestments. And I'm sure as you know, Cornell has divested in the past in the 80s when the Partizan regime did not have set. You're one of 154 members of that meeting that have actually talked about that. So I'm wondering maybe as the leaders of this movement, as you call it, if you can compare the moral obligation we have with this divestment to what we had in the 80s in terms of, I think it really affects the impact it has on the Cornell community and the nation. So if you can compare this movement with the one that we do.
That's a good point to bring up. It can be a tough comparison to make, especially with the history of how it actually got up to South Africa a little bit. Let the movement follow the movement. It seems like we were kind of on the tail end. In this case, I would really love to be at the forefront and really have history really especially shining right now. I think there is an obvious tie to it in the moral and ethical implications, and obviously there was such a far fight in the moment. But now, Cornell has been one of the institutions that's really pioneered the research and science on global warming. Climate science department to point to this as a problem, pioneering alternatives to it. And I think that puts us, that gives us the unique both opportunity but also responsibility to really not just state the problem, but act on the fact that there's a problem, especially given us that New York land grant institution. We have kind of somewhat of a responsibility for public engagement, especially in matters of ethical implications.
And you can say the same thing that Peter just said about divestment movements of more recent history, including our divestment structure, which happened when President Gordon was president. So this is not unprecedented.
Next is Rep. Talbot.
One of the reasons I don't know. But I don't want to say that's not enough, but it's not visible. We spent, I forget the number, $71 million. That's obviously huge. It shows a very real commitment by the university. But if you go around campus and ask people, not very many people know that number. If you leave campus, if you don't, no one knows that number. But if Cornell really wants to be a leader and set an example for peer institutions, they need to have a more visible act. Cornell becoming carbon neutral is not going to make a national news. In fact, the UCs are asking for that money. There are, they've pledged to become carbon neutral by 2025, and it's happening. It's very low breath as well. What we really need to do is something that kind of visibly sets the bar of the leader.
And also, if you think about it, it's a little bit hypocritical that we're doing all this work, all this research towards, you know, having alternative schools, building, you know, these platinum buildings, but we're still making money off of companies that are, you know, perpetuating the opposite of that goal.
Next is Brett Maletti.
So, I'd like to thank the faculty and Sarah and David for putting it together. I like this, probably one of the best resolutions we've seen this year. Probably one of my favorites. My only question would be, your work on making the information available. I would even go as far as to say, how much further can we take this? What's kind of the next step after this? Yeah, could you speak a little bit about that?
So can you specify a little bit the next step after
what? So it says here on online 24, it's going to result that the president of Cornell will submit an annual report about the university's progress and divesting from companies in large parts. Okay. As described in student assembly resolution. And that's where it ends. So I'm saying what comes after that? Is this something we can put in this resolution, or is there something that's coming afterwards? Does that make sense?
Yeah, great question. It's also very similar to a lot of the questions we got last year when we, you know, passed the other version of this. We have been working kind of, you know, in the line, like, with administrators, like our CIO, David Edwards, and our chief financial officer, Donna Cagney. So we are going to continue those conversations of trying to come up with a compromise that the students, the faculty, graduate students, and administrators alike can agree on. So this is not going to fall behind. The reason why we are asking for this annual report as like a specific tangible outcome is not only because it's just the CSA for the same thing, but because we would like to see, you know, what kind of progress that happens, because during our very limited time when we can meet with these administrators, they can't always give us all the details, but we just really want to see, you know, that this is a priority and that the staff members that they've, you know, put on these initiatives that we discussed with them are really doing their work and doing justice to the problem.
Next is Rep. Henderson. I do want to remind everybody, because I don't know if I made this clear or not, this is business of the day now, just so you know. Okay.
Yeah, so my question is, what is it about that you guys are willing to pay for, I guess, as a public statement with Cornell investing? Because I think you guys said that we can expect, so you guys said that $2 million a year, whereas the CIO said that $100 million a year. So I guess, what returns do you guys think to be able to get?
That's a good question. That's a tough question. I do want to point out one thing. We said plus or minus $2 million here. It could actually, from all numbers, improve. I think I'm going to think it's a little bit of an impossibility to answer that question. We really haven't seen the justification. We haven't seen the derivation of the chief investment officer's numbers. If we were to understand why there is this discrepancy, we would be able to kind of better, we'd be all kind of sitting at the same table and being able to better negotiate and see where exactly we could reach. And I think it's impossible to really quantify and put a number next to it right now, but it's, we have to do something.
Next on the speaker's list is Trustee Gitlin.
Hey guys, thank you for coming and talking about this. I understand a lot of hard work has gone into this. My question is, and I know both of you have been in conversations with the CIO at Murray's Impressions for him for breakfast yesterday. So, like you said, at the UA meeting at the breakfast, we're obviously balancing the budget by a very slim margin. And let's say that you were to divest, if it did affect the endowment so that we have to raise tuition even more so or lay off more staff, do you think that's worth it? I'm just looking for a response based on just that specific reason.
Obviously, the goal is not to harm any of the university's congregation. The primary of the university is then to teach. So we don't want to hurt financially scholarships or anything like that. However, directly is not going to be an all-or-nothing process. We understand that. It's going to have to have some sort of cooperativity, and it's going to have to happen over time. So if we are reasonable and smart about the way that we do divest, we shouldn't have to risk any of those problems.
Yeah, I think there really is a lot of passion on the campus about it. In fact, I'm going to have a similar question to ask is basically kind of formatted. If, you know, we do this and if we start losing money, how many people in the room, faculty members at it, would be willing to take a cut in their salary? And I don't remember an exact number, but personally, every bank from everyone else, I think there really is a lot of passion. I think it's worth saying again that I think we're hurting ourselves by not divesting. I think we're hurting our integrity as a research institution, we're hurting our integrity as teachers, and I think obviously one is quantified, one is not, but I think that's what I'm saying.
Next is VP Block.
Thank you for coming, and I apologize for missing the presentation, but this does look to be a very substantial presentation. I guess I just had a question. It sounded like there's still confusion between your effort and the CIO's calculations on what the cost of this would be. Do you know why exactly there is that discrepancy, or is it just that you don't know what they're calculating versus what you're calculating?
That's a great question. We don't know what the discrepancy is. We've asked for the derivation of the numbers, which is just the different kind of numbers, in the last two meetings. We've asked for the justification of those numbers, and they haven't provided us anything other than the figure of $100 million or more. So we really can't make the decision approval without understanding that.
Then I definitely recommend to this assembly that we not vote on this until we hear back from the CIO. And I think the reason why is that, right now we're getting calculations between $2 million and potentially several $100 million. I'm pretty sure that it's probably somewhere in between there. And I think that when we're looking at a resolution like this, we really do need to analyze the cost of this. Because at the end of the day, it's easy for us to say that, the environment's important. Truly it is. And if this is a zero-cost solution, I think that everyone would be lining up in support of this. But I think that Trustee Gitlin brings up an important point. And I think it's an answer that we kind of got danced around, but I don't think we got a concrete answer from y'all, which is that if we do have to lay off people, or if we do have to increase tuition, is that worth it? And I guess, kind of following up on that is, what is the effect of divestment? If we sell our securities and other people pick them up, have we really affected these companies? These are companies that the world relies on fossil fuels right now. Do we really think that, unlike past efforts, do we think that this is something that can actually make a difference in terms of the use of fossil fuels?
That's a great question. And again, I want to emphasize that the point of this is not the direct financial impact these companies are not, whether their bottom line is not going to be hurt by or not. And the point is really the political statement that we make. I think that is very real, even if the stock gets bought off the next morning. And in terms of, I wish I could answer your question better about what would we do if we have to raise tuition given that we're losing a little bit of money. The question is, if we have to raise tuition by 1/1000, 1%, would it be worth it? Yes. If we have to raise tuition by 15%, 20%, 30%, no, probably not. But I can't answer that question without having a reasonable range of what I can expect it to be, and without justification for the CIO, I don't have that range.
I'm sorry?
Can I yield my remaining time to Trustee Gitlin?
You don't have any remaining time. What?
Okay. So can you just clarify what you're looking for? At some point, maybe offline, can you clarify what you're looking for from the administration?
Is this something you two can talk about? Sounds good? Sounds like it. All right, great. Next is Rep. Hudson.
Wait.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't see you.
I just want to add another discussion that you might be interested in. So in terms of these cards, you can go to the CIO's webpage. The standard deviation of our investment return, let's say, down to 9.7%. That's averaged over the past 5 years. That's 9.7% of $5 billion. That's a huge number. That's how much fluctuating, how much it will continue to fluctuate. When we had to lay off people back in the crash of 2008-2009, Cornell's income went from an average of 8% plus to -1%, 1%, 100%. It's clear that the numbers we were talking about are a small fraction of the fluctuation that has occurred and that will continue to occur. Stock market is an unsure thing, and that's just the way it is. So we can't, so we can plus or minus. We are saying we're going to do that, but we are saying it's a lot of uncertainty whether we spend it or don't.
Next is Rep. Hudson.
I am completely in support of this resolution, but you could even just put Rep. Hudson's block. As a student who has completely relies upon financial aid, relies upon scholarships, and represents a large community who relies upon financial aid, I think without the necessary numbers, I don't feel comfortable voting on this issue. I think this is something that can be fixed. I think this assembly would be inappropriate to vote on such an issue if we don't have the actual money from the administration. Although I do support it, I can't comfortably vote unless I know the numbers that they are running.
Motion to table this?
There's been a motion to table this.
Can I make a comment first?
There's a motion on the floor. There's a motion to table. Is there any second? There hasn't been a second. Seeing no second, the motion is not recognized. Continue.
I personally respect that method to move forward with it. In meeting with them the last few semesters, it's been a little bit difficult. They've been very close-lipped about our numbers. They like to hold them tight. I think our best way of getting them is to pass this resolution today, to pass it through the employee assembly, to pass it through the university assembly, to be able to go to the administration and be out in front and say every constituent at Cornell, everybody in the end said we want to do this. I think that's the best way to get done with it.
Great. Next is Rep. Thompson.
I also just learned second level approaches for the 2.7. I think it's really important that we hear a little bit more information from the CIO simply because there's some really intelligent people who hold a different opinion. And of course, this resolution is very narrow and just, but I think it's important before we vote or really focus on yourself. We just need to go in more. I think it would be unfortunate to pass this resolution before we really want that just kind of echoes the vote.
So I just want to emphasize that, these meetings with these administrators have kind of been an uphill battle. We've been promised numbers in the past, and we've never been given them. And I think that, the power that's behind this resolution in particular, in addition to the other resolutions of the other assembly, has passed and will pass, or perhaps will pass. I think that the power is that, they'll realize that we're serious, and that they'll realize that we're going to get it done. And I think it's also important that the student assembly, reaffirm that we still are, we were last year, and we still are today in favor of this movement. And I really want to emphasize that it is important that we address it, and I think that it's probably better for us to address it sooner rather than later, because there is no guarantee of when we will hear from.
Okay. Next is Rep. Drucker.
Hi, guys. I have a question based on your title. To drive policy strategy for a sustainable future, I just want people to be aware that there are a lot more components of a sustainable world, whether we use non-sustainable resources that we're renting to sleep, or we use resources that are sustaining, as the table says. There's so many other aspects, such as population, building typology, and other components for the sustainable future that, are not outlined completely by this resolution. This resolution only contacts one aspect of sustainable, which is the
CO2 emissions from buildings and trying to reduce them because humans currently use 1.5 meters, you know, by 2030 we would use twice the Earth's resources. I was just wondering if, at least for future resolutions, is that if we really want to have a more sustainable future, that we pay attention to the other aspects of sustainability and we pass more resolutions that have Cornell truly act sustainable and not just greenwash it, but be changing. But I'm in support of this idea, so I hope that works.
Yeah, I pulled that comment. I think there's a lot more work to be doing, to be done. As this resolution, I don't blame you for a second, but this is the solution. It's just a step in the right direction, and I think hopefully we'll open the door to the floodgates and more resolutions that focus on campus sustainability. And I'd like to add a comment pertaining to a couple other previous questions. The chair of the Senate Finance Committee requested the same number that we're requesting right now. It's already turned down. I think really what we need is to be able to come unanimously as students, graduate students, professional students, faculty, and staff, and that's really where we're going to get the numbers.
Community member. One, two,
three.
You have to speak into the mic because we get recording. I can't hear you.
Okay, thank you. First off, thank you for the presentation. I really found it interesting, but as you said that there is a matter of risk with the numbers, and you said that the minor thing in the resolution it will be that we're calling out Cornell saying, unfortunately, we want to divest. But if it comes out the numbers are somewhere below the $50 million, which would someone also rely on potentially approval for the rate tuition, we've already stated that we want to divest, and that is not critical. My question is there language that this could be repealed or taken back if there's a red line or a certain number that's passed to say this was 5% increase? Because otherwise, I think we're just saying we're going to divest no matter what, and then even if the numbers come back, we will move on to the one that divest. Thank you.
So that is an awesome question. This is actually a body resolution, meaning that it's a recommendation, it's not legislation. So if the university does decide to work with us to divest, in a situation where there's a lot of red marks, this could be repealed essentially. And you know, really what we want to focus on today is time frame. We want to see the social group, we want to see the university move forward at least with the idea, and you know, we want the university to put their money where their mouth is, essentially.
Great. Alright, that extinguishes the first speaker's list. Before I recognize any persons on the second speaker's list, I do want to point out that we have extinguished the time that we've allotted for this discussion. So right now we're entertaining motions to either suspend the agenda and continue with this or table this until next week. There's been a motion to suspend the agenda and continue with this discussion. It has been seconded. Is there any dissent to that? Seeing none, we're going to continue with this discussion. Are there any persons who did not speak on the first speaker's list that wish to speak at this point? Representative Warshaw.
Hi, thank you. I have a question. So if we do pass this resolution and we show the number to the CIO, how do you know it's actually going to cause any difference? Because yes, like all the people agree that this should happen, but if there are 12 numbers who don't work and just a people agree and we don't have them.
Sorry, can you
repeat
the question?
I guess my question is, how do you know if we do pass this resolution, the GPSA and the student assembly and everyone else agrees that the CIO would still care? Like they would that Kevin Torn still agree that okay, I'm going to agree this even if the numbers are bad, we would still go along with this. I guess my point is we're kind of going along hoping that the numbers are fine, but at the same time how do we know if we're gonna agree? Because in the past student assembly resolution last year,
yeah, that's a good point. I don't think we'll be able to guarantee that anything will be coming to us. But I think since last year when the student assembly initially passed it, there has been a huge sign that the university is really, really, really paying attention to the given. And in terms of that, the discussions that have been increasing in frequency and intensity within the Board of Trustees, President Ford coming out speaking about this more and more, I think it has already had a substantial effect. And that's as a result, primarily just the students, now graduate students, professional students, the faculty, or the staff level students. I think We don't have a guarantee, but there's definitely been signs of the university coming around the university.
Right. There are small things that they are already doing to give them some credit, including there is someone in the investment office who is now charged with looking to sustainable investments or green earth investments. And that's the thing that happens in the law resolution. What we do really want to do is, you know, really start this movement and reaffirm that we are still invested in this cause. And I think that's the power of the resolution. And whether or not we do get the numbers, it's something we can't guarantee. But if we keep pushing, our chances get higher.
Okay. Next person. Well, anybody else on the first field list? That blue? So we're going to move on to the second speaker list. First one there is D.O.U. McGill. Passing the mic to you guys, they have to pay attention.
I just want to comment on the fact that, you know, you mentioned very early in the presentation about the misinformation that's out there about fossil fuels and what that investment is. And you know, after sitting here for the last 45 minutes, all that misinformation, at least personally for me, really has not been clear enough in the sense of how divestment is going to help A, our university, and B, our world. You know, it's one thing to be against fossil fuels. It's a completely different thing to be for divestment. And just looking at, you know, the language of these resolutions, you know, like there's a lot of educated people out there who say the top 200 coal companies are the ones leading the charge to alternative energy. You know, if we don't invest in them, how are we going to help companies like ExxonMobil change, you know, change their practices and invest in more alternative energy? So that's more of the idea of, you know, going about this in different ways of investment. Then another point that was brought up is the fact that we don't want to hurt these companies. That, you know, like Representative E.P. Block mentioned the fact that, you know, or someone mentioned the fact that if we just divest from them, the stocks will be bought by other people. And then the response was that, well, we don't want to hurt these companies. Well, then, you know, why are we doing this? Are we just doing this to make a political stance for the sake of making a political stance when deep down we know it's really not going to change anything?
I think it's just make a political thing because we have a very good reason to believe that it will change something. You know, every divestment campaign we reviewed from adult services to Darfur, from tobacco to South Africa, divestment campaigns were successful in lobbying for restrictive legislation. That's a quote from what, Officer Yachter, right?
You're going to have to speak into the mic.
Yeah.
You're going to have to speak into a mic because we record and we can't hear you. That would be desirable.
Okay. The goal of legislation, that's something that we need. And this is the way, this is the clearest path to that legislation. We're asking about that happening. In 1985, there were overwhelming activism on this campus. Thousands of students were arrested. There was a large gap in the resolution. And we heard the same thing about costs from the administration, that it would not be feasible to divest. A year later, when the U.S. Congress passed anti-apartheid legislation, this campus followed, Cornell followed, and it partially divested. Now, there are two phases of energetic response to a crisis here, and one is kind of leadership, and the other is less. One of those honors of this historically, and one other does less. So I think we're seeing something play out in a very similar way. Divestment works. That's what the Oxford study shows. It works to get legislation. Legislation is what we need.
Okay. Next, I'm going to have to keep going. Next is Rep. Hittinger.
Thank you very much for that that point there. So just I guess elaborate exactly on what was just said by the sponsor for the resolution. I think that we all need to collectively take a step back and examine that there is in fact a problem. I'm not even going to repeat it because it was just clarified. I think that we're also viewing it wrongly as the student assembly. Your vote is not directly increasing in tuition, and your vote, you're not an economic expert. It's simply, this is a sense of the body resolution, meaning that we are proposing to the administration that there is a problem. This is shown as to be an effective means of soliciting legislation that improves, our environmental health. And at the end of the day, the powers that be in the university that make these decisions will weigh the pros and cons of the resolutions that we hopefully will all bring before, the powers that be. And they'll make a consideration in light of the financial implications. So we're voting on a sense of the body, acknowledging the gravity of the issue, and proposing that as a means of becoming more carbon neutral and ethically sound, as well as, soliciting what I mentioned, the legislation that can ultimately, increase our environmental health immensely. So, once again, this is not us as economic experts having to have all the numbers in front of us. This is simply acknowledging that there is a problem and proposing this as a solution. So, again, I think that looking at the problem, this is the best solution that we can propose right now. And I have not heard any overwhelming arguments against the fact that this is an effective proposition.
Great.
Second.
There's been a call to question. It has been seconded. Is there any dissent?
I'm
there's been a lot of dissent, so we are going to vote to vote. All those in favor of closing discussion, please raise your placard. Is that a vote or no? Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. All those opposed to closing discussion. All right, everybody vote. Please vote. If you're opposed to closing discussion, raise placards. 1. All those who abstain. By vote of 6 to 16 to 0, the motion fails. We are going to move back into discussion. Next on the speaker's list is Representative Stefanko.
Yeah, I guess I don't necessarily agree with all the arguments. This isn't the idea. The point of this resolution is not necessarily to directly remove all of our investments from fossil fuels, but to put as much pressure on the administration to be more transparent about where our investments are going. And I think that that's an important point. I think if you believe that we should be moving into a world that has less fossil fuels, which I think is the consensus here, that you should be also believing that a world where we're now investing in fossil fuels is not necessarily a good thing. Especially if we don't know the actual financial impact, I think that we should be able to have an educated debate about this. And if the administration is not giving us information to have an educated debate, we should be doing as much as we can to provide pressure for them so that we can have an educated debate. And I think that's where this resolution comes in. I don't think at any point we can trick ourselves to think that if we pass this resolution, that means that the administration is going to immediately flip and then millions of dollars are going to be lost in tuition. I think that's the argument being made by a few representatives, and I think that. I think that's ludicrous, quite frankly, and I think that we need to move into a direction where we have a good debate with all the numbers, and then we can figure out that solution. But I don't think that saying no to a resolution like this will accomplish that. I think that means we will not have transparent information.
Great.
We will not be able to have
that's going to be time. Next is DV Block. Oh, sorry.
So I think Representative Stefanko is right. We don't control the endowment, shockingly, so this will not divest immediately. Look, I think it's a really bad idea to vote on something when we don't have the numbers for it, and here's why. I really disagree with Representative Hittinger on saying that this is a proposal, because directly in this resolution it says we support the faculty resolution statement, which says that Cornell will fully divest by 2035. So this is not a proposal, this is support. And I think that if what you're really trying to get at is trying
trying to get information, then let's write a new resolution and say that the university needs to give us this information within the month, or something like that. Let's make this resolution clear for what we want. But I think it'd be a huge mistake, and I think it's very worrisome that the Faculty Senate would say that we support full divestment by 2035 and has no idea how much this is going to cost. That's a really terrible precedent to set, and I think that it'd be a very bad precedent for this assembly to come in and say, we have zero idea what this will actually cost, and we're going to say that we support full divestment. I think instead, let's write a new resolution, and let's get this information from them. I agree it's ridiculous that we can't get this information from them, but the way to do that is not to say we fully support divestment.
Okay. Next is Rep. Hudson. Next is Rep. Bonani.
So, I actually completely agree with what Representative Walker said. While I agree with the beginning here, that there is a problem, but at the same time, there are many ways to solve this problem, and at the moment, it's only in a solution. I think the university, not to be completely blind, they have created the supporter creation of a new remote time. And while we these are very important decisions, the way this resolution is taken, we would be supporting a decision, we would be making a decision for a resolution that is not entirely clear. So I support the rewriting of this resolution into something more tangible and something more that in the short term will become a response to the university so that we can have clear data from the CIO. Otherwise, I really don't feel comfortable making decisions like not only the endowments, but also the libraries that we need to.
Great. I guess sponsors time now.
Okay. So I'd like to refocus the conversation here. Yes, information would be great. Information to make an informed decision would be excellent, especially if we, well, according to the season, we're actually voting on the way the money is actually used. However, we're in a little bit of a different position today. Today, we're voting on a piece of legislation that asks Cornell to, start thinking about putting their money where their mouth is. We spent how many millions of dollars still being an absent from gender so that, we could research new sustainable fuels, make a sustainable future, become more environmentally friendly. We came up with a new environmental design, climate change, identity of a major, but we came up with a new major. Students are drawn to this school because of its sustainability, and I think that it's important that we remember that this resolution, at its core, is asking our institution to stop supporting the fossil fuel companies that we spend so much time and effort to move away from. This is a financial statement, yes, and it's not intended to hurt the students. This is intended to start a movement. This is intended to have Cornell perpetuate the idea that it has been teaching us since we got here.
Okay. Next, what information?
As a simple by resolution, is the president or any power above the student assembly required to follow the content of this resolution?
No, they are not. The president is not required to follow the content of any resolution that we pass, whether it is legislation, sense of the body, or what have you.
As sense of the resolution, is anyone required to follow whatever the content of this resolution?
No.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Next on the agenda, next on the speaker's list is Representative Talbot. Next is Rep. Maletti.
I'd like to draw attention to the diction used in this resolution. So we have two requests here. The one declares support, and the second for that.
paragraph. And the next step, we have, we'll submit an annual report of the university's progress. So that's the information, right? So that second clause is what it seems like we all want. It seems like that the one before that, 20 to 22, the term report is where the dissent is coming from. What I would like to say is that support in itself is not binding. It's very vague. Support doesn't carry any financial commitments with it. It could be political support. It could be support could mean a lot of things. I think that it's vague enough to allow room for the president to act in ways in the assembly's best interest. And I think that, like Sarah has said, you know, if we claim, like, in 2012, just last year, they have a climate change minor, like, if that's really what we're about, we've got to show it. So, with that, I'd like the motion to, I'd like to call the question.
There's been a call to question. It has been seconded. Is there any dissent? Seeing none, we are going to do a roll call vote. All those in
support.
I'm sorry?
Maybe close before we begin voting.
Sure, you may close and then we will move immediately into the vote. Go for it.
How long?
Since it's 6:26, I'm going to give you 2 minutes.
I want to thank everyone for the really informative. It's a great question. I really appreciate that. I'm really, really taking this seriously. It's a very much serious issue. And I do respect the opinion that it would be beneficial to have more numbers before we vote on this. I very sincerely wish that I could have come with an explanation of why the CI gave the numbers that we did, but we have not received those. My fear is that if this resolution is not passed, then it will only hinder us getting the numbers. I don't think that the right way to get the numbers is to take a step back and to demand quietly. I think that this statement by the NSA in coming out in support of this resolution is the best and the quickest way to get the numbers. And once we have those numbers, we can have a much more fruitful dialogue with the administration. We intend to do this in the most financially responsible way we can. And we really can only speak in vague terms right now. We can only speak in vague terms right now simply because we do not have the sanctioned numbers from the administration. And the next step in this is to get those numbers, and the best way to do that is to pass the resolution today.
And I'd also like to emphasize, now is not time for the student assembly to be a wet noodle. I'm asking you all to vote today in favor of this resolution, because not only has the student assembly been historically in favor of divestment in the past, but it's also very clear that the people who are teaching us as well, like the graduate students, the professional students, and the faculty, have already passed it. It's time for us to be in solidarity. We speak a lot about how important shared government is. What is it going to say about us if we do not stand together as an entire community? I really want to call you guys to action right now. I think that it's in our best interest to at least fight for this. I'm not saying that this will guarantee that we'll get numbers. I'm not saying that this will guarantee that the university will divest. What I'm saying is that now is our time to push for change on this campus. Now is our time to support the students who have worked so hard on this. And I thank you all for really listening and taking the time to ask such hard questions. These are questions that we've been grappling with over the past 2 years. And I would like to invite you all to be a part of these discussions, whether or not this resolution is passed. And I want to thank you all for your time.
Great. There is a motion on the floor at this time. Brian, you can go. Yes.
If we vote to pass or not, is there a potential to amend language afterwards?
No.
Okay. So what we pass now is what it will be.
What we pass is what it will be.
We can reintroduce.
You can reintroduce a separate resolution, yes.
Okay.
All right.
Bailey. Yes.
Lupita.
No.
Bandari. Blah.
No.
Banani.
Stay.
Chen.
I'm sorry, I can say it one more time. No.
Drucker.
Yes.
Fidenti.
Yeah.
Harris.
No.
Henderson.
No.
Pinser.
Yes.
Hudson.
Abstain.
Blue.
Yes.
Lucero.
Yes.
Blessing.
I'm sorry.
Maletti.
Yes.
DeBango.
Yes.
Talbot.
Yes.
Thompson. Salty?
Stay.
Warsaw? Dow?
Is that a yes?
11-6-6.
Was that a yes from Dow? Okay. I neglected to do this earlier. I'm sorry. My fault. The community is entitled to two collective votes. Which, since this is a sense of the body resolution, which means all those in the audience, including ex officio members, you can vote either yes or no or choose to abstain. So, all those in favor, does that make sense? Oh, I'm sorry, not including the faculty. Or the graduates. This is the undergraduate thing only. Sorry. unless you are Gina or Dean Hubble, because they are ex officio members of the assembly. All right, all those audience members in favor of Resolution 60, please raise your placards or hand or stand up, whatever floats your boat. Are you two voting or no? You're ex officio, yes or no?
Yeah, I guess I'm voting.
Okay, so are you voting now?
Oh,
yeah, okay, got it, okay. All those opposed? All those who abstain. I'm sorry? There's three. Those in favor, raise your hands one time. Raise them high. I can't see you unless I'm back here. You're allowed to vote. Yes, I'm sorry. Oh, I was right. All right, and then all those opposed one more time. And I got the, yeah, right, and I got the abstention. Okay, so we're good. All right, so by a vote of 4-4-3, the numbers are split. So it is one vote in favor and one vote against. I'm sorry? No, because the number of abstentions is ruled as fewer than, so it still works. So we're allocating one vote in favor of R60 and one vote in opposition. So now by a collective total of 5, 10, 11, 12, 2, what is that, 5, 6, 7, 2, 6, the motion passes. Congratulations.
Wait, are you sure?
The sense of the body.
Oh,
it's not count. All right, so it is now 6:33. We have extended. Distinguished the time in the meeting. There's been a motion to adjourn. I'm going to second that. So, meeting adjourned.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.